This week on Developer Weekly.
What Forms does is also put an abstraction layer on that UI with XAML, but you can also do it from code with C# again.
Now, before we start this episode, I want to ask you for a favor. Could you please go to ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly and rate this podcast and leave a review? This helps me to spread the word about the podcast and helps other people to find it. That is ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly. Thank you so much. Welcome to another episode of Developer Weekly. This week I'm talking with Gerald Versluis about Xamarin and .NET MAUI. Gerald is a software engineer at Microsoft from the Netherlands. With years of experience working with Azure, ASP.NET, DevOps, Xamarin, and other .NET technologies, he has been involved in a number of different projects and has been building real-world apps and solutions. Great to have you on the show, man. Thanks for being here.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's always good to talk to a fellow Dutchie on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because then we both have the Dinglish accent a little bit.
We have that, and there's the advantage of the time zones, because that's a thing now too. But
Yeah, absolutely. How do you like that, working with Microsoft? Do you work a lot in different time zones?
So the big plus I have at the moment is that my direct team, so of course we have, like, you know, it goes in certain rings, if you will. We have a small team of about 6 people, and then we have a larger team which consists of multiple of those teams of 6 people. And, you know, my direct team members are all in Europe. So the only time difference we have is we have 2 people. Well, one is in Ireland and one is in the UK. So that's just an hour. So that's we can manage that. But yeah, you know, other people are in the US, of course. So, you know, that makes for some interesting times that you have meetings and such. But that's part of the job.
Yeah, that's all part of being a blue badge, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's actually very cool. I've also interviewed Megan Bloemsma, who also works for Microsoft the Netherlands, or at least for Microsoft from the Netherlands.
Yep.
And, you know, it seems to me that Microsoft is now just, it doesn't matter where you live, right? You don't have to reallocate to the US per se. Like you say, you can just work with your friends here in Europe.
Exactly. Yeah. So it all depends kind of on what role you want to do and what team you're going to land in. So we're going to talk about that, the Xamarin team. I've started on Xamarin team. I'm now on the Visual Studio Code Spaces team. Yeah. But the Xamarin team Xamarin existed before it was part of Microsoft. And they were already very remote friendly. So the team that I was working with then was 50-50 US and Europe, and actually none of them was in Seattle. So I think that was big part of the reason that I got the job in the first place, because that didn't really matter. But still, the first question from the recruiter was, are you willing to relocate? So, you know, they still want to. I mean, now maybe things changed because of the whole COVID situation. Yeah. But they would still very much like to have you in Seattle in an office and just work together. And there's definitely advantages to that. But there's also advantages to working remotely. So just with software development, it depends.
Right. Yeah. It always depends. Yeah. But at least it's now as such that it's not everything happens in the US anymore. Also, actual software development and things get made somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So you are working on Code Spaces, Visual Studio Code Spaces. It's called Visual Studio Code Spaces nowadays.
So I think there might be some changes that I can't talk too much about. But yeah, for now, at least it's called Visual Studio Code Spaces. It has been known as Visual Studio Online and then as something else. And now it's Visual Studio Code Spaces.
Oh, that's actually very cool. What is that? What does it do?
Right now, I think the best example, it's kind of developed like also white label. That's why I mean, to be honest, I'm not even exactly sure if the name is going to change. I'm just busy with the software and not all the things around it. But the best example is we develop it kind of white label. So a first class citizen is also GitHub, where you can go to a repository and you can say, okay, clone this to my desktop. But now, if you're in the private preview at this time, it will become available later this year, I think. You can also have an option to say, okay, open this repo in a code space. And what that code space is basically a web browser hosted version of Visual Studio Code, the very lightweight IDE from Microsoft as well. And you will have that in your browser. The repository will be cloned into that, and you could just start coding from there. So it's basically a cloud-hosted development suite. That's it.
Ooh, lovely. Yeah, I've actually used that already, and it's just very nice. You know, it's just code from anywhere, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's the thing that they want to do, that we want to do, is to just take away all the pain of setting up that specific environment for a very specific situation. So Xamarin is a good and a bad example at the same time, because that's not supported yet. But it, for Xamarin, you have to install a lot of SDKs for iOS, Android, all those kinds of things. And you can just have a code space. Normally, you would maybe have a desktop somewhere put away in your archives for some kind of legacy project that you don't want to touch unless you really have to. That can be turned into a code space. You can just have that in the cloud, pull it up whenever it's needed, or whenever you onboard new colleagues. You don't have to put them through the whole hassle of setting up their machines, taking hours, maybe days to download all the right bits and put it in the right order. You can just give them that code space and they can start coding right away. So very cool stuff.
Oh, that is a very cool scenario. I didn't think of that. So does that then mean that you only pay for it when you then spin that up again?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there might be, again, I'm just the coder on this, not the... but I think there might be some cost.
Like storage costs or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's like a fraction of the cost when it's running. So yeah, basically you just with everything that's in the cloud, you just pay for what you use.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
So that's for our next episode.
Yeah, that's definitely for our next episode. So you're working on that, but still, is your passion still Xamarin?
Yes. So I think I have a
Can you say that out loud? Maybe someone from your team is listening.
I still have a passion for Xamarin. I will always have a special place in my heart for Xamarin. Yes, and they know that.
All right, so let's talk Xamarin. Like we just discussed before the episode, I like this podcast to be inclusive. So there might be listeners that have heard of Xamarin but have never used it. I have used it slightly. I'm not a mobile developer, so I kind of know what it is, but you know, there's lots that I don't know as well. So can you explain to us what Xamarin actually is and what you can do with it?
Absolutely. So Xamarin is basically the solution. It's kind of confusing because Xamarin was the company name, but it's now also the name of the framework. So for a little bit of history, Xamarin was founded before it was part of Microsoft years ago. And it evolved from other things. You have to look that up from Wikipedia. But then it was acquired by Microsoft, and Xamarin is now the name of the solution that you can use to write mobile apps from one single code base. So you can use C# and .NET, the things that you're probably used to if you're listening to this. If you do other stuff, then there might be other frameworks. But if you're into C# and .NET, Xamarin is probably the choice for you. So you don't have to learn Objective-C or Swift or Java. Xamarin has created all kind of binding libraries around those that will basically translate, if you will, the C# code to the native code, and you can build your mobile applications that way. Very, very short for what it is.
Yeah, so Xamarin is then the framework, just like you have .NET framework and you have .NET Core. And then on Xamarin, you have workloads that you can run, like an iOS workload or an Android workload, right?
Exactly, yes.
So you can build iOS and Android. Can you also build Windows?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's C# and .NET, so UWP is definitely included, yes.
Ah, and then also Mac, I can imagine.
Yes, Mac OS as well, definitely, yes.
And then does all of that stuff run on Mono?
Yeah, so we have Mono, which is like the, if the, again, a bit of history. Mono was basically the Linux implementation originally of the .NET framework on Linux.
Right.
And that kind of evolved into, a whole big thing, which is now also kind of symbiotic maybe with the .NET framework. So things are integrated into each other. And as of .NET 5, .NET 6, everything will be integrated and you will not have any difference because, you know, the whole focus shift on from Microsoft on being open source and being cross-platform across every solution. So technically, it will still be Mono, which is a separate framework, but in practice, you will not notice anything of that.
Right. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about what the future holds.
Yes.
When we've explained Xamarin. So when you create a Xamarin application, let's say I want to create an iOS app, how do I do that? Do I do it in Visual Studio?
Yes. So at this time, you have the possibility to also develop on a Mac, actually. So you have Visual Studio for Windows, Visual Studio 2019, and you have Visual Studio 2019 for Mac, which is a variant of what's it called? Sharp Develop, I think. That's way back. But anyways, it doesn't matter. It's Visual Studio for Mac right now. You can just install the right workload, as you said. You can do that from the initial setup whenever you set up Visual Studio, or you can do that later. And then you'll just can go file new project, new solution, and you can choose a iOS application, you can choose an Android application, or you can choose a Xamarin Forms application if that's what you want.
And what is that, Xamarin Forms?
So if you're starting to develop Xamarin iOS, Xamarin Android, so that's basically what they now refer to as traditional Xamarin mostly, you can develop those mobile apps from that one code base. But the one thing that isn't really shared is the UI layer. So you can do all the business logic. If you put that in a shared library somewhere, then you can share all that code between, I'm going to say Android and iOS because that's like the most popular platforms. But whenever I say those two platforms, you can put the other platforms right next to it and it will still work. But you put it in a shared library and you can share that code between Android and iOS. But the one thing that isn't shared at that time is the UI layer. So you will still have to create your UI in for iOS that is storyboards, and for Android you have AXML files. So you still have to do that in a native way. And what Forms does, Forms came a little bit later. What Forms does is also put an abstraction layer on that UI with XAML, but you can also do it from code with C# again. And what that does is it lets you define a button, for instance, or a label in the abstract way, and it will do the translation from that label to a label how it should look like on Android, or a button on how it should look like on iOS. So you just define your control on the top level, and Xamarin Forms know how to translate that to the native platform. So then you can also share your UI code, and you can get up to, 99% of shared code, basically.
And then that actually looks like a native thing, that button, for instance?
Yes. So that will be actually translated, air quotes, to whatever that should look like on that native platform. So if you look at a button, then for iOS, that is like it doesn't really show a border. It's just a blue text, basically. And on Android, I don't know, it's a kind of grayish thing that looks like a button.
Okay. Oh, that is very, very useful. So you code it once, or at least the UI in Xamarin Forms, and then you can use it on whatever, iOS and Android.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
And and Forms then has all the properties that are shared between the different platforms. So a button has a background color on all platforms, basically. So you can change the background color. And again, that will be translated in how that background color is applied on that platform.
And is it then translated at compile time or at runtime?
That's a good question.
What is the performance? Would it be faster to create, would the performance be better if I create an iOS app or Xamarin Forms app?
So that's funny. I think there is some kind of report out there somewhere that they did measurements for that. And I think in some cases, I'm not sure if that was with Forms or just with Xamarin. I think with just traditional Xamarin, that was sometimes even faster than when you would create like a native app. And with Forms, I mean, there has to be some kind of translation somewhere. The way it basically is done is it happens at runtime. So you have these renderers. So you define that button, and on each platform you have a button renderer. So on Android you have a specific renderer, and that will see, hey, okay, I have to render a button now, and it has these properties in the abstracted layer, and it's going to translate that into the native button. In that renderer, it will create a native button and apply all those properties for you. And on iOS, the same thing. So there will be some overhead probably, but the performance overall is pretty good.
Okay, so you won't, let's say, feel it that you're using a Xamarin Forms app.
No, if done right, then no. I mean, you can always write bad code and mess things
up. Of course,
but no, it shouldn't have to be that way.
Very cool. So when you are developing, let's say, an iOS app with Xamarin, either Forms or the Xamarin iOS project, how do you do that, actually? What happens when I press F5? Do you have a real device or an emulator or something?
So the interesting thing is for iOS, the Apple license restricts actually doing development and running things on other platforms than macOS. So for a long time, so you really needed a Mac to do actual iOS development. I think there's now a solution called Hot Restart that kind of goes around that. So you would still need a physical iOS device to actually test it, but you can run it from Windows without any Mac attached. So there's some magic going on there. But, you know, usually whenever you start with this, you can do Android, iOS, and you can do an emulator that's installed on your machine. Or you can, of course, like I just mentioned, have a physical device that you plug in and run your app and test it on that. And, of course, if you're using Forms, I mean, in the ideal world, everything will look the same. In the real world, you will probably have to tweak your UI here and there per platform. But yeah, you know, then it's probably easiest to start. If you don't have a Mac, it's probably easiest to start on Android, work your way through that, and then some way find a way to get a Mac from somewhere. You can even rent them in the cloud if that's what you want. And you can tweak the iOS bits and you have an app.
Scott Hunter told me about that thing, Hot Reload or Hot Restart. I'm not sure what it was called.
It's kind of confusing because you have both Hot Reload and Hot Restart, but they do very different things.
Yes, but that basically means that you do not need a Mac to develop things for iOS, right? Because then you can just F5 it to an iOS device or emulator, and it just basically works.
Yeah, exactly. So what it does is basically push the new bits. It's kind of interpreted on the actual iOS device in this case, then, I think. So that is something that is not allowed when you, in the actual version that's going to the App Store. So it's just the thing that you can use to during the development of your app. But if you want to really like compile your app to go to the App Store, you will need an actual Mac to do that build. But you know, you can get App Center to do that, which is a free solution for your automated build pipelines. So you can just hook up your code to App Center, and that has some free build agents and things that you can use to create that actual version. So, you know, that shouldn't be a problem.
Right. So App Center, that is Visual Studio App Center, right?
Yes, exactly.
Is that something like Azure DevOps?
It's basically a more easy getting started version of Azure DevOps. And it's like the name says, it's targeted specifically towards apps, hence the name App Center. So it's a very easy way to get started, like for free and easy with your apps, basically. So if you're starting with iOS and Android, it has a couple of things. You can go in there, you can point it to the repository. I think they support a big amount of providers there, like Azure DevOps, like you, or what is it? Is it? Oh, it's called Azure DevOps. Sorry, the naming yeah. things confuses me still sometimes. So Azure DevOps, where you can have your code or GitHub or maybe some others. And it will automatically pick up on the solution files or the project files that you might have in there. And you can start creating your build definitions for iOS and Android. It has a very minimum set of settings that you have to do. It will figure out the most bits automatically. And you can just build your apps from there and get binaries that you can run on your device or push it directly to the app stores or do some testing from there. So it's a very cool solution to get started with that.
Ah, all right. So you use Xamarin to develop everything on your local machine, let's say, and then you can use Visual Studio App Center to build and compile and test it in the cloud and potentially push it to all the app stores.
Exactly.
Without having a Mac, maybe.
So if you use Hard to Restart and use that to compile your iOS code for the App Center, I think you should be able to create an iOS app without ever having to own a Mac. Yes.
Ooh, it's very cool. Okay. So I know when you develop for iOS or for Android, let's say for the phones, when you see an app in the App Store, it always says, well, this app only works on, let's say, iOS 11 and up. Mm-hmm. And for Android, you have the same thing. You have an Android SDK version. I don't know what version numbers they use. 20 or something and up.
Yeah, I think probably 1 wrong. Through 29 or something it's now. And then they also have like the code names like Nougat and the Jelly Bean and whatnot, something like that, yeah.
That to me, that kind of feels like supporting multiple browsers, right? Multiple versions of browsers, i.e. 9 and up or something. How do you deal with that?
I think that's one of the bigger challenges with app development. So for Android specifically, because they try to be backwards compatible to actually that version 1 almost. So they are creating, and with they, I mean Android/Google/whoever's doing that, they are creating like support libraries. So you can hook into that APIs and that support library will figure out how to make it backwards compatible to a certain version back in time. And, you know, because Android has a little problem with getting people to update their versions because Android is kind of like a licensed OS, right? So anyone can say, okay, I want to put Android on my phones. And it's then usually what they do, if you look at like Samsung, for instance, they sprinkle some magic over the UI and they have their own custom version. But because they create that custom version, it's also harder to update that to newer Android versions because newer Android versions will come out. They will have to adapt their software. But Samsung or some other vendor is like, okay, but I want to sell my new phone. So I'm just going to take the newest Android version at that time, sprinkle my magic over that and not care about the old ones. So it's very hard to get people and because simply the vendors don't really put any effort in that to update Android versions. So you have to take into account that there are a lot of people running older Android versions. On iOS, things are different because, you know, iOS just says they have the hardware and the software managed by themselves. So it's just, you know, they kill the support for some iOS version. And from that moment in time, only the newer iOS versions are supported and that's it. They still have backwards compatibility for a long time for a lot of devices, and with the diversifying of the same of the different devices with different sensors and new versions of not only the fingerprint reader but also the thing that reads your face. So you know there's some differences in there as well, which makes it a little bit complicated. But it's still very much easier than on Android. But yeah, that's definitely something that you have to think about and is one of the bigger challenges in mobile development, I guess.
Well, yeah, nothing's easy. God, God, I love iOS though, you know. Sorry to say it, but I'm an iOS guy all the way. Always have an iPhone. I tried Android for a while, but like you said, you know, the vendor sprinkles some magic over it and you just have some Samsung Android version. It's just, I don't like it.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone should do what they like, right? I mean, I'm the same. I'm with you. I like iOS. I want my phone to just work, to do the things that I need to do to be productive. And there's also people who like Android because they can tweak all these kinds of things and settings. And I'm like, you know, I don't care. I just want it to work. I want to do phone calls. I want to check my email. I want to scroll mindlessly over all my social media things. You know, yeah.
Yeah, and there's obviously there's something to say for cost. Because iPhone is just ridiculously expensive.
Yes, so there's a lot of debates about, like, is that justified or not? I don't know. I mean, they use some high-end stuff, ingredients in there, and they put a lot of costs of, you shouldn't forget the cost that they put into the software development and all these kinds of things. Is it justified? I don't know. If you look purely at the components that they put in there, then maybe not, but there's a lot of other stuff. And, you know, if you're in the position to do it, and if that's the things that you like about iOS and Apple, then do it, and otherwise don't.
Yeah. And if you're using Android, don't worry, I still love you.
Yes. It's okay. Yes. We're still friends. Absolutely.
So one of the things that you that make an app great is that you can use things like the camera and the microphone, GPS, and all the things that are physical on a phone, right? How do you do that in Xamarin?
So that's the interesting thing. So because of there's the difference between Xamarin and Xamarin Forms again. If you're using the traditional Xamarin, I'm just going to name that again. Every API is covered because they have created like C# wrappers or bindings, whatever you want to call them, for each and every API. So whenever some new API comes out, they have invented some kind of new sensor on your phone. Xamarin will create a new binding for that, and you are able to talk to that through C#. You will still see some namespaces that that think back to like Android or iOS. There will be some iOS and Android specific naming in there, but you're still able to do it. And if you look at Xamarin Forms, then you have the you have different libraries that try to again abstract that away. So there is a lot of libraries from James Montemagno. If you have been looking into some Xamarin, you will have seen his name, I promise you. And he had a lot of different libraries that did those things. So for instance, like you say, do things with the camera or pick an image from the gallery or do something with the GPS. A little while ago, they combined all these libraries into a thing called Xamarin Essentials. Which now holds all these different libraries, and it makes you access, I think, some things in the file system. It makes you save user preferences. There's all kinds of things in there that, again, are now in a abstracted layer. So you can just use them from your shared code, and Xamarin Essentials will do the hard part for you and figure out how that should work on the native platform.
So this is not very Xamarin specific, but you know, most apps, they need a backend, right? They're not really functional without a backend, without an API that they talk to. What do you use for that typically? Is that, for instance, Azure App Services mobile apps, or is it something else?
So the things that I came across when I was not working at Microsoft, but actually I was working with Xamarin, so building apps. You are probably very lucky if you land in some kind of greenfield project where you also get to create the backend. Typically, there's already some kind of backend. And, you know, like with most applications these days, I think you will communicate through at least a web-based one with things like REST, JSON, that kind of things. So, you know, that's all things that you can do with Xamarin as well. You can connect it to all the Azure functions. I think for most Azure solutions, there's also libraries for that, which, again, you can just use because it's all NuGets and C# code, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so you can use Azure functions. You can use a web API thing that you create in ASP.NET if that's what you want. And there's also some... I'm not entirely up to date, to be honest, but I think there's also some services that are specific to mobile use, like you say, which is probably just a very slimmed down version of maybe an Azure function or whatever. I mean, that's basically how Azure works. So yeah, there's a variety of things that you can use for that.
All right. Yeah, I was talking about the Azure App Services mobile apps, which is kind of like a web app where you can host your web application. But this is then specific for a mobile backend. So it supports things like offline sync and push notifications, stuff like that.
Yeah. So that's always, that's the other challenge of mobile development as well. Syncing push notifications is always on the list as well. So like I said, I didn't really get to work much on backend stuff for that, or at least create new ones. But I'm going to trust you on that. I have to check that out.
All right. So Xamarin is really, really cool. And I had a podcast episode with Scott Hunter, and we talked about .NET 5 that's coming up this November. Mm-hmm. And .NET 5 will basically replace .NET Core, and it leaves Xamarin and .NET Framework in place. And then after that, in 2021, hopefully, .NET 6 will come around, and that will contain everything that you can build with .NET, like websites and desktop apps, and also contains everything that you can now do with Xamarin, and also contains everything that you can now do with Xamarin in something called .NET MAUI, right?
Yeah,
does that mean that Xamarin will go away in 2021?
So the name Xamarin will go away. And I'm sure that Scott Hunter in his episode is explaining this a lot better than me. So what's going to happen is that, you know, you now have .NET Framework, .NET Standard, .NET Core, all these things. And we're basically just going back to one .NET. I mean, there's going to be one solution. I mentioned that earlier as well. Microsoft is shifting towards this whole cross-platform open source thing. It doesn't have to matter like which flavor of .NET you're using. It's just going to be .NET, and you can write all the things for all the platforms. That's where this is going to. And .NET 5 is going to be the first step towards that. Like you said, not all things are going to be in that yet. But .NET MAUI is going to be a evolution of Xamarin. Xamarin Forms, to be specific, actually. Because, you know, Xamarin, like I said, as a name will disappear simply because it will be taken into like the .NET ecosystem. So the namespaces and those kinds of things will change because it will just become a part of .NET. So it will not be a separate solution anymore. It will just be the .NET solution to create an app, just like you can create a website with .NET right now.
Right. And then you still would have a file new project iOS application or Android application. And then next to that, also a MAUI application, which is for targeting multiple platforms, right?
Yeah. So that's like the completely shared thing with UI and everything. MAUI stands for multi-platform app UI, which probably no one will remember. So that way we have the acronym for everything. .NET MAUI, like the name in Hawaii, and everything that is now in Xamarin Forms will go into system.maui. We also have system.devices, where all the stuff that is in Essentials that I just mentioned will go into. It will be just part of .NET. And I mean, it's not going to be simply copy paste everything to there, change the namespace, and then that's it. Because Xamarin Forms has been existing now for I think about 5 years. So that might be nice with Xamarin Forms 5 coming out now. So it's 5-ish years at least. And in that time, of course, the team has learned a lot about, you know, what works, what doesn't work. The renderer things is a great concept, but, there might be some things that we can improve there. And with Xamarin Forms, again, also like basically like with Android, we try to be as backwards compatible as humanly possible. So it was very hard to make breaking changes. But now with the transition to .NET MAUI, there is some room to do that. They get to reevaluate the whole thing. The renderers will be better optimized, so they will be faster. They will be a little bit different architected. But again, they're trying to do this all in a way that will be as least breaking as possible. I think their aim is to be not breaking at all, that you will be able to transition all the Xamarin Forms code that you have right now to .NET MAUI. But, you know, there will be definitely some optimizations going on there.
Right. But then work and maintenance on existing Xamarin.forms stuff will stop, right?
Yeah, so Xamarin Forms 5 will come out in November, I think. And that will be the last version of Forms. After that, it will get some bug fixes, it will get some critical patches, that kind of things, but there will be no major development. That will go into .NET MAUI. And the first previews of .NET MAUI will be coming at the end of this year, because, you know, at November, .NET Conf, they will probably launch the whole .NET 5 thing. And after that, somewhere after that, or maybe together with that, I don't know, they will also launch the first They will also launch the first versions, preview versions of .NET 6. So that will have the first .NET MAUI bits as well.
Right. And then to keep people with Xamarin Forms 5 happy with new stuff, there's also a community project, right?
Yes. So thank you. I have, because, you know, I'm not working on Xamarin anymore in my daily job. I still wanted to be connected because, like I said, it will have a special place in my heart. So, you know, there you have the Windows Community Toolkit, which kind of does the same, which has a lot of like add-on stuff for UWP. And there has been an initiative before for the Xamarin Community Toolkit as well. But it never really saw any release or development. So we're trying to start that up again with the support of the Forms team. And me and Javier, who is still on the Forms team, a good friend of mine, we are attached from the Microsoft side. But it's mostly we have a core team of another 4 or 5 people from the community that will drive the development for this. And what we can do with this community toolkit is... unfortunately, in Forms, there have been a couple of PRs with some bigger features that have been sitting around for too long. Some of them are actually community contributions. And we are now able to take these because those won't make it into Forms anymore. And also there were some experimental features in Forms. And things can't be experimental for forever. So Xamarin Forms 5 will be a freeze, no more features. So things will also not move from experimental to stable. All those kinds of things will now be able to move to the Xamarin Community Toolkit, where they can live, where they can mature, where they can be developed. And most importantly, where users of Forms can use them and not have to wait 2 years before MAUI comes out. Or a year, sorry. But maybe 2 years before these features are actually implemented. So, you know, that will be a nice bridge to gap the things. Of Forms going into .NET MAUI. And I don't rule out the possibility that whenever things go into the community toolkit, where they are developed and they go up to a certain level where they have proven their worth and we transition them from there into .NET MAUI maybe.
Ah, very cool. All right. Well, thank you very much for teaching me everything about Xamarin today.
No problem at all.
Now, you also have a podcast of your own, right?
I do. It's nullpointers.io with two friends of mine. One lives very close. He's 2 streets from me, Stephen. And the other one is in Switzerland. That's Mark. And actually, also Xamarin brought us together. So I've been to a lot of events. I actually hosted one event, the Xamarin Expert Day. Where we tried to have some expert sessions around Xamarin, and we got a nice community from that. And we got to hang out last year before the whole COVID situation in our latest installment of that. And actually, Mark came to us like, hey, I think we have a nice connection between the three of us, you know, making some nice jokes, having some fun. Why don't we just record that and turn it into a podcast? And maybe coincidentally, sometimes also talk about something technical stuff. So, I mean, we try to do some technical stuff, but we drift off to some other things as well. But yeah, it's mainly us having fun, and hopefully some other people will find it informative and fun as well. So,
tune in. Awesome. And where can people find that?
So I think the easiest thing will be to go to nullpointers.io. And I think just like you, we're on all the major podcast providers. So Spotify, Google Podcast, I don't even know all the things, but just look it up in your favorite podcast thing. And if we're not on there, let us know. We'll make sure that we provide it there as well.
Excellent. Well, go and check that out. So thank you everybody for tuning in to another episode of Developer Weekly, and we'll talk to you next week. This episode is brought to you by me. If you like this show and you want to support it, please visit my courses on Plural site and buy my new book, 200 Things Developers Should Know, which is about programming, career, troubleshooting, dealing with managers, health, and much more. You can find my Plural site courses and the book over at www.developerweeklypodcast.com/about. That is www.developerweeklypodcast.com/about.